This is the Brisbane Football Review with your host, James Coghlan.
The best ideas come about 20 seconds too late in my experience. Scott Owen.
There's a mute button, people, don't worry.
And Adam Pace.
Well, look, I'm going to feel like that, you know, I'm the one who shot Barbie's mother.
Starting now.
Well, it's certainly been an eventful week for the Brisbane Roar, both in the men's, women's, on and off the pitch, which means we've got a lot to cover on this pre-Super Bowl edition of the Brisbane Football Review, pre-Super Bowl 58. It's not Taylor's version, it's James Scott and Adam's version, as we recap all of the news that's been going on. Adam, how are you?
I'm good. It's been an interesting week. It's been the game on Friday night seems like a lifetime ago. With a lot of what has been going on, and it's actually tested the faith a little bit as a supporter. But you know, here we are, and we'll keep on going through.
Scott, your faith never wavers. How are you going?
I wouldn't go that far, James. It does waver, but it's been a busy week. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. I haven't had anyone creating Twitter accounts to start arguments with me, so I'm calling that a win. But anyway, we will start with what has been a pretty big week of news off the field for the Roar. Now, I know we did a Ross Aloisi departure special just before Christmas when he left, and then the news that his successor's successor, Ben Kahn, by the official release of the club, was stepping away due to medical leave. He's been placed on indefinite medical leave. And I think first and foremost, based on what we know about Ben, our time covering him in the NPL and seeing his time down in Melbourne and back up here in Queensland, we just wish him all the best going forward. It was a bit of a surprise to see the recently appointed assistant Ruben Zadkovic announced as the replacement coach, but I have to admit my eyebrows were raised when Zadkovic was brought in. It didn't quite make sense on how it fit in with the Roar structure, but Adam, I suppose just from a pure football perspective first, the Zadkovic appointment made a bit more sense when you realised, oh, they might be needing someone to be their fourth head coach in just under 6 weeks, and hopefully this one will get them to the end of the season.
Yeah, look, it's one of those ones where unless you're there, unless you know what was going on, what the intent, what people were thinking. To me, I look at it as that Ruben Zadkovic is probably the best available coach, most experienced available coach that was around, you know, that was available at the time. In hindsight, you can look at things, you know, a number of different ways. If something did go awry with Ben Kahn, you know, by his hand or by performance or whatever, that you did have a ready-made A-League coach who has that experience, you know, to step in. But what has sort of transpired, we never in our wildest dreams sort of, well, you know, not say we didn't expect this to happen. I don't think we expected it to happen so quickly in the way it happened. Whether it was intentional, knowing full well, you know, about Ben's health status, or anything like that, that's not for us to judge. That will come out all in good time, I believe.
And Scott, just from your perspective as well, I suppose first and foremost, we should say, like, the reason we didn't do a Ben Kahn departure special is because we just decided this wasn't really something that was appropriate to make a podcast out of.
Yeah, there's not much we can really say, is there? He's stepping aside due to medical reasons. As you said, we wish him all the best in his ongoing recovery from what he's been dealing with, and there's not a lot more we can really say about that, so there's not really anything we can make a podcast special out of. And
we're not going to exploit this for clicks, I think it's a big thing.
No,
exactly.
Or views. Also, and Brisbane Roar, I think, has said the expectation is he will be back at some point, so that's at least what it sounds like the plan is. So Ruben Zadkovic is the interim, and we'll see how that goes. As Adam said, he has experience in the A-League, and he got Perth to within 3 points of the top six last year, given everything they went through, is a pretty good achievement. So he's a capable set of hands in the interim, Ruben Zadkovic.
For sure. And, you know, we're addressing this as much out of obligation as anything as well. And it's where I'm sort of going to take over for the next couple of minutes. But yes, we have seen the videos and the rumours circulating online about, you know, maybe there's something more nefarious going on at the Roar. we're aware of it, we're not going to give it any more credence because we tend to have some form of editorial standards, and we're not going to just take the word of people saying, dude, trust me. Like, that's just not good enough for us. And look, if they turn out to be correct, great. If not, then that's the hole that has been chosen to be dug on. But from what we've been told, because we do get to talk to people as well, we know that there is more, like, I don't want to say there's more to the story because that feels like it might be intimating something that isn't there, but I really wish I'd scripted this out. Yeah, we're just going to say we're aware of it. We're not going to give it any more airtime than it deserves. So let's move on now and focus on the on-pitch action for the Brisbane Roar, because, some other big claims have been made before, which we're not going to... Maybe not have helped the credibility.
I think we've already given it enough airtime.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Dig me out of this hole, please. Let's go
dig
on.
Dig up.
All right. Let's talk about the A-League men's game on Friday night. And, well, it's what we've been looking for from that men's team for quite a while in what has been a pretty rough and tumble season for them, both just in terms of the injury hits that keep coming. But it was there for Corey Brown at the back post. Late on, 95th minute equaliser. But first and foremost, Adam, it was just good to see them really pushing to the end and finding a way to rally and get a point against the league leaders.
You take away form, you take away sort of all those other intangibles, you just look purely on the performance. You know, this is a very, very brave performance that, you know, that it all went wrong from the start. Tom Aldred, you know, whether you think he's been playing well or not for the last few weeks, to have him out asking young James Nikolovsky to again, you know, sort of lead the centre half pairing with Kai Truan, which, you know, the defence has been under a microscope about how they've struggled the last, you know, 2 months. So to be called up and do that, you know, to lose Henry Hoare, one of their sort of, you know, creative sort of sparks, you know, late in the first half, to lose their fullback, you know, in Jack Hinger to a concussion injury, you almost expected once that Wellington hit the front in just after half time that, you know, they could have fallen into a heap and gone down 3-4-0. But to their credit, even after the goal was scored, which I must say was a beautiful cross from Oscar Van Hatten, they found Bojanar Krajev, and then not much that McElfrey could do about it. But the fact that they kept on pushing, they kept on, you know, trying to find a way, and they were eventually rewarded with Corey Brown's goal in the 95th minute. I think that's 1 point. It's 1 point gained. I think so much more. I think a bit of belief will come out of that, and it's what they start needing. Maybe their luck is turning a little bit.
Scott?
Yeah, look, we can talk about the actual performance in a minute, but look at the circumstances of this game, James. I had Ben Kahn stepped off for health reasons on the Tuesday, I think it was officially announced, maybe the Wednesday, I forget what day that officially...
It was on Wednesday.
And then Tom Aldred, literally between the warm-up and the team's walking out in the tunnel, was not able to take part in the game. And then within half an hour, Henry Hoare, who's been one of their best players this year, succumbs to injury. Then Jack Hinger gets a concussion. And all that happened in the first 30 minutes of the game, or in the lead-up to the game. And then they go a goal down. And as Adam said, there's plenty of sides who would have said, all right, this is not our day. And they would have just gone through the game as however they wanted to. But the character of this group, I mean, you can question a lot of things about this group if you want to. The character is not one of them, James. They've been through a lot in the last 12 months, on and off the field. And this week in particular, they've been through a lot. And to go on and get a point at the end, playing so well against the league leaders, I think it can give them real confidence going through this week against Melbourne City. That's real momentum you can take, James, to overcome what they overcome and get a point out of that against a very good side in Wellington. And they have to admit, they're a very good side, Wellington, and they were probably really disappointed not to get the 3 points from their perspective. But from Brisbane's point of view, to overrun them in the last 15 to 20 minutes where they did, create the chances they did, and then get the reward for it, I think it gives them great confidence going forward and given everything they have overcome in the last week, it's a really, really good point.
Yeah, the weird thing is, like, it wasn't the only Raw win that we've seen at Suncorp Stadium this season, but that was the best I've felt walking, like, away from a game since that Australia Cup, or from a Raw home game, I should say, since that Australia Cup quarterfinal against the Wanderers. And it was only a draw, which, you know, if you want to be negative, then it shows just how far my expectations might have changed since that night back in September. But I get, like, we've been waiting for something like that for a while now. And it is also that same sort of response that we saw against Newcastle in Unite Round. Adam, I believe you were there in person for that one.
I was.
Yeah, but, like,
it's
that...
the box.
Not this again.
Thank you, APL/Football Australia, for that.
Yeah.
Joys of being media accredited. Anyway, but back to the game itself. Like, it was a pretty soft goal that they went behind as well, where it was just quick counter-attack, and we were talking as it was unfolding, going, well, of course they're going to go down the other end of the pitch and score. But it was a good response as well. And look, I've completely lost my train of thought here, but I think what I'm trying to say is it's been a while since we've seen that side get reward for trying to close a game out.
Yeah, I think so, and I think that they were probably the better team in the last 20 minutes. That I think that a lot had to do with Marco Rojas coming on, making his debut, player number 215 for the Raw. Thanks to Scott for that information. But
Stat boy, Scott.
I think that they just sort of they like I said, you would have, with everything that went on in the first 50 minutes, including the way that they conceded, given the fact that probably 1 minute before, Alex Paulson somehow, with just absolute nifty footwork, was able to escape a big high press that, you know, normally that could have even resulted in, you know, a massive mistake at the back and then probably tapping for the Raw. The fact that Wellington have gone down the other end after about 25 passes, won the ball back, putting pressure on Corey Brown, and then they put their crossing for Crave to score. You would have thought, that's it. We're just throwing a towel. This is too much. But you've got to credit the character of this side. As we keep on saying, you know, we've said it, you know, Ben can't say it in press conferences. You know, they've gone through a lot, this squad, but they still show up. And you know what? You can question their form. You can question, you know, maybe some of these players' ability, but you can't question their heart. And anyone that doesn't see that, why are you wasting your money supporting the club? Why, you may as well go away and go support someone else, because if you can't at least admit that about this squad, then I'm sorry, I can't help you.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. As I think in terms of the reactions to the game itself. But Scott, yep. What did you make of Marco Rojas?
I thought he was good when he came on, actually. When he did come on, he played a little bit different role than we all thought. When they signed him, they said he was a 4, but he played more of a number 10 type role, didn't he? He combined really well with Keegan Yeltsin, actually, in that last half an hour. And that was when the Raw played a lot of their best football in the game, was when those two were able to get on the ball, running at the Wellington defence and combining quite nicely. So as that grows, that could be a really dangerous combination for the Raw going forward. You've got to remember, Keegan Yeltsin played his first full 90 minutes in this game as well. Obviously, Marco Rojas has been there for a week or so training in his first appearance. So I just thought he went quite well, actually. And again, I think he will get better over the next coming weeks. I know we don't have too much time today, James, but very quickly, one guess. Who was the last player to wear number 20 for the Raw?
It wasn't Aaron Amati Holloway, was it?
It was.
I got one right.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
I got one right.
Score one for James. I've got to throw you an easy one every now and
then. And a lot of our listeners will go, who?
I will give a bit of background on Aaron Amati Holloway. He is a guy that, when he signed for the Raw, and I saw him at their season launch media day, I said to Aaron, the then media manager, please never put me on camera next to him because it will absolutely crush my ego. He was a big, muscular boy.
Yeah. No, look, in all seriousness there, like, he was one of the former coach before COVID. His recruits didn't work out as well as we hoped, but he was handy, Aaron Amati Holloway.
He was. You know who else was quite handy? Ruben Zadkovic. He got the Raw a point on his debut as manager. So let's hear what he had to say after the match.
Oh, it's kind of hard to make a good assessment right now. It's been a whirlwind, you know, week and a half for myself. You know, coming in, I came in with a clear role of supporting Ben and being his assistant, and I've only known him a week and a half, and he's a great person. So first of all, to be honest, my thoughts and feelings are with Ben and his health and his happiness, and you know, hopefully he can recover and get himself back to his best, because that's important. I think given those circumstances, I think, you know, the staff, the players, all of our admin staff, the club as a whole really kind of, you know, gelled themselves together and picked themselves off the floor, and we only had two sessions really for me to try and pick a team and work on some things, some basic things. And I think, you know, the credit for me goes just to the players, because, you know, they were outstanding tonight and they showed a lot of bravery, like you say, and they worked really hard and they deserved something out of the game. So I'm glad that they got their, you know, small reward at the end. I think, in all fairness, we probably should have won the game, and I think there's still a little bit of disappointment, which is good.
And that was one-time enemy of Raw fans, now, I suppose, friend, Ruben Zadkovic, the interim head coach of the Raw A-League men's side. And, yeah, I think there was... I suppose he's got an interesting job now, is what I'm trying to get at. I'm really mentally cooked today. I'm very sorry, everyone. This is not my best show. But, yeah, I thought Rojas and Keegan Yelicic, especially, those two mid-season acquisitions certainly look like they're offering that drive forward out of midfield, and with players returning to health, with other things coming, other players coming through as well, it's creating a nice little glut in that sort of midfield role, and I think it's going to ease the pressure on someone like Tommy Waddingham or Jonas Markovsky, I said James Nikolovsky, who are going to be you know, not the most experienced strikers. Do you think that's fair, Adam? It's sort of like you try and take the goal-scoring pressure off the kids and maybe get support from elsewhere with the attacking trio behind the lead striker.
Well, yeah, you think of names, you know, from back to front. You know, you've got Jay O'Shea, Flo Barringer when he is available, Marco Rojas and Keegan Yelcic. I know Keegan Yelcic is a young player, but look, at the moment, he's not on loan from a European club by accident. You know, he has earned his stripes. And one more as well, that it was under Ruben Zadkovic that Keegan Yelcic really sort of, you know, blossomed as a player at that level, which basically got him his move to Belgium. So I think that it's a very, very, you know, all of a sudden potent forward line. You throw in the likes of a Tommy Waddingham, a Nikola Mulyuznic, a Henry Hoare in amongst that pack, you know, interchanging into that, and all of a sudden you actually, if they can all find some form and find some cohesion, if I were, you know, defensive of opposition teams, I wouldn't be riding off the Raw, because I think they may have something. But the trick is going to be to get all those moving parts as one cohesive unit.
Yeah, which is of course easier said than done. All right, who is doing the 3-2-1s for this game? I've already forgotten.
That would be me.
Go for it.
I'll keep it quick. Our 3 for Kai True and 2 for Keegan Yelcic and 1 for Macklin Freak.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, Macklin Freak, I do like, had a great game out back as well. I think that needs to be said. Because Wellington had some good chances, and he kept them in the game, even more, especially if there was a chance late in normal time where if that goes in, it's game over. So definitely, sometimes we overlook the custodian at the back, but Macklin is doing very well since his return from being dropped.
Yeah, and I do feel a little bad for Matt Acton that he may finish this season with 8 goals against on average for his starts, but sometimes you just cop a bad hand. Anyway, let's move on now, because we've got the A-League women's match to recap.
Can I also quickly say on the league-wide recap, we'll skip it this week, but Marco Rudan had a press conference for the ages, if you haven't seen it.
I did see that.
There's going to be some blowback from that. I haven't
show calls notice issued this afternoon. Yeah. He's going to... I think they're going to be paying, but you know what? The point he made... look, I can't not completely disagree with it either. let me say that.
I was just going to say, I advise people to go and have a listen to it because it is absolutely.
Sorry, I'll just quickly throw my league wide takeaway if you don't mind. Just quickly, I think tomorrow night, Waitangi Day out in Sky Stadium, top of the table, Knicks and Mariners. That is going to be a game.
Well, I'm going to just say I've got the Rudan press conference saved to a USB around here somewhere. I'll watch it after the show. And
is it a good idea to be poking the bear at the moment?
That's just how I save my files. Anyway, and also I'm going to also say the betting markets are up on Australians' ignorance of New Zealand public holidays, which is why tomorrow's game is kicking off at 1 p.m. Brisbane time, because it's Waitangi Day, and they're trying to make it an afternoon kickoff. And I'm already seeing many, many Australians going, but what about me?
Public holiday.
To which I would say, stuff it. Take a long lunch. Anyway, A-League Women's wasn't as pleasant of an outcome for the Roar. It was 2-1 to Melbourne Victory. Tamiki Alip on the score sheet for the Roar. Emma Checker and Rachel Lowe scoring for the Victory. And, yeah, Scott, it wasn't really the best afternoon all around, was it?
No, it wasn't the best performance from the women's team. It's just, again, it's an issue of consistency, isn't it? They played quite well the last couple of weeks. Away to Perth, they played well. We spoke about that. They played really well away to Western Sydney. You thought, oh, well, here's an opportunity against what is a very good and experienced Melbourne Victory side, but a chance to really continue that momentum. And unfortunately, they just started a little bit flat, didn't they? They got back into the game through Tamiki Alip, who was outstanding, and that became a bit of a stalemate for a lot of it until Victory got their winner towards the end of the second half. But it's one of those where, again, it's that matter of consistency for the Roar, and it wasn't their worst performance of the year by any stretch of the imagination, but it's one of those where it's just a disappointing way to, off the back of two really good performances away from home, to come back home and unfortunately not quite deliver. It was a bit disappointing.
Yeah, it was. All right. The interesting thing that I noticed watching that game as well, and I know this came up in the press conference, was just, it felt like the urgency wasn't quite there at times for the Roar, was it, Adam?
No, it wasn't. And I was just going to say on back out that this side frustrates me no end, the Roar side. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. And I say that because they, on paper, are a very good side. We see flashes of brilliance, but then they just make some really ordinary lapses in concentration. And it just seems to be luck against them because it costs them. And I take in point the what would be the winning goal that Holly Palmer sticks her foot out, you know, rather innocuously. The ball bounces over Ruby Cuthbert's head. Mackenzie Weinart gets one-on-one with Jordan Silkwitz. And, Silkwitz can do nothing but foul. But I think as well, to go back to your question, James, I think a lot of it did, that slow start did sort of compound, where you think after 4 minutes, after conceding off a set piece, you think that the urgency would be there, but they really was. They didn't get off the mark. I know it was a warmish day, but not the worst they played in. But it just seemed like that they were almost waiting for something to happen. And it took Deborah Andella Harp to get a shot away, and to Mickey Yelp to sort of be there to claim the parry and tap in for them to sort of get back into the game. It's almost like, in a way, it was a reactive play rather than, you know, oh, we're down, let's go and chase this game early.
Yeah, and I think that's been the biggest problem, not just this season, but even going back the last couple of years. It feels like they're almost too nice. I hate to say it, but you look at them and go, I think you're going to have a good day today, pick player in the team. And I don't think they've really got someone at the moment, outside of maybe Yallop and Della Harp, who can really just say, ah, screw it, we're winning today. I think they've got Hecker who can do that. And look, if we're wanting to stay, keep some positives, I think Hecker is the player that, as they move into this run home now, she can say, no, we're winning today, and we're going to win because of me. I think she's the player that's good enough to make that sort of stuff happen, Scott.
Entirely possible. The only thing is exactly where Marielle fits into the side when she does get herself up to being starter minutes, James, because she came on, I think, off the left in this game for Sian Frye from memory late on in the game. So it'll be interesting to see, does she take that sort of a position, or will she be one of the two behind the strike? I have to wait and see, but absolutely Marielle has that winner's mentality to be able to make things happen in the final third of the season for this team. There's no doubt about that.
Sorry, I'm just pushing random buttons on my computer at the moment.
Don't press the one that'll blow the studio up.
Hey, I've only blown up one studio, and that was an air conditioning fault. All right. The ending. I've got to ask about it. The one-on-one for one-on-one with Silkowitz gave away the penalty. There's really not a lot to complain about there, is there?
No, it was all Ben.
I was actually thinking, was this going to be a triple jeopardy situation? Because at that point in time, when she brought her down, I was just expecting the red card to come out as well. I'm glad it wasn't. I think it was the right decision not to. But usually when you see a player surging towards goal, even when there are defenders tracking back, it's normally a case of the referee will give the red card. So I was a bit surprised that didn't happen. She actually guessed the right way as well, Jordan. It wasn't a bad effort to try and save the penalty. It was just a well-taken one from Rachel Lowe. So not a lot you can complain about there, unfortunately. And I don't want to say victory deserved the win. I think a draw was probably a fairer result, but it was one of those things you can't really complain about.
I mean, I'm sure I can try.
Look, I actually think, you know what? This is going to sound really, really weird, but hear me out. But I think it actually, you know, compliment to Jordan Silkowitz, actually have the presence of mind not to charge out and try and foul Mackenzie Weiner outside the penalty area, but actually to wait in the penalty area. So all she had to do, even if she conceded the foul, as long as to describe it as a, quote, a tackle or a footballing play, she was only ever going to get a yellow because of the triple jeopardy. But if she goes charging out of the penalty box and fouls Weiner, and that's a red card every day, and that's like I said, the referee wouldn't even need to think. But the fact that she stood her ground, stayed in the penalty box, tried to make if you can call it, for lack of a better term, the tackle. Yes, got it wrong, conceded the penalty, but at least she had the chance to try and stop Rachel Lowe, which, yes, again, it was a very, very well-taken goal, rather than, you know, being down to 10 players and relying on maybe Keely Richards to make a heroic play.
And you've got to remember as well, James, that the same thing happened in the first half as well when Wynette was through and Silkowitz stood up in her penalty area and denied her very early in the game. So clearly she had that confidence of, I denied her once, I can try and do that. Again, Anna makes a good point. She did charge out of her area. It would have been a clear-cut red card, so that's a very good point.
Yeah, so, again, we're trying to stay positive here.
It's a compliment to her. She's got a very, very good head on her shoulders. I think no matter what happens with Jordan Silkowitz, where she goes from here, I think she's got a bright future, and she's showing it at the club no matter what happens.
For sure, and I feel like looking at the big picture of the season, 3 points from the two games against Melbourne Victory actually probably seems about right. Because I remember that first game, I sort of came away with the thought of, how in the hell did they win that one? Whereas this time around, I'm like, how in the hell did they lose that one? So, you know, it's joys of football, swings and roundabouts and whatnot. But, yeah, I think that's kind of where I'm landing on it overall. It was 3 points that they desperately needed. Unfortunately, they couldn't get it. Let's hear from Alex Smith after the game.
Alex, side played quite well, so I'm not able to get the result, unfortunately. What are your thoughts on the side's performance out there tonight?
Yeah, look, I was happy with the effort, intensity. Again, a few missed chances at some crucial moments in the game probably hurt us, and sort of a sucker punch goal there, you know, and sort of 15, 20 minutes left, but that's football sometimes, I guess.
It seems like a very settled side at the moment. Is that something you've been trying to work on the last couple of weeks? You just pick the same side and let them grow and build together?
Yeah, I mean, the old cliche, you don't change a winning team. So, obviously coming off a win last week. But, we just need to find some consistency. It seems like one game is good, and then we have two games that are good, and then, you know, we have a performance that's sort of subpar, like I kind of feel like it was tonight. So we just need to find some consistency as a squad.
Individually, Tamika Yelich is finding consistency. I'm really happy with what she's bringing to the team. It seems like now she's really finding her feet in terms of what she has to bring to this team to make the team successful.
Yeah, she's fantastic. I think she prefers playing this sort of style and you know, pressing more high up the pitch and
and getting in those pockets, and when we do win the ball, we can find her, you know, pretty easily. So she's certainly contributing with goals as well. So it's nice to see.
And I'm going to guess by process of elimination, Adam, it is your turn to do the 3-2-1s.
You would be correct, and I don't think there's much mystery on this. 3 points to Mika Yalp. She has been excellent the last two games. Long may that continue. 2 points, Deborah Ann De La Harp. She's been very good down that left side. I think she's at what they've needed. Actually, sorry, the right side, I should say. She's at what the club needed, and doing everything she's been asked of since she signed. And 1 point for Kaya Stevenson. She was very, very good. Had a couple of chances, especially sort of, yeah, weaving in and out and sort of, you know, running at the defense, at the Victory defenders. I thought she was very, very unlucky on a couple of occasions. So she continues with her progress as one of the Raw's young phenoms.
Oh, there we go. All right. Now, again, I am conscious of time, so we're going to very quickly one-sentence league-wide takeaway. Scott?
Oh, for League White, Canberra. They beat the league leaders. Fantastic result for Canberra United.
Ditto for me, Adam.
I'm actually going to say from that same game, but just the absolute marvel that is Melissa Barbieri, who extends the record for most appearances, national record for most appearances, and to think that she is older than I am and is still at the very top level, I bow down to her. Yeah, as an athlete, she is incredible.
Yep, no arguments there, and quite frustratingly so also.
And if you don't know how old I am, if you know, you know.
Yeah, well, and I was also going to say, somewhat frustratingly, actually really pleasant to deal with as well, Barbieri. Bumped into her on the sidelines a couple of times, and yeah.
She's a great ambassador to the game. There's no question about that, the former Matilda's keeper.
I know. I want to dislike her because of her club allegiances, but she's got a great sense of humour as well. So, yeah, give credit where it's due. All right. Now, we've got some news headlines that we need to get to that have also popped up in the last week. Let's start off with some good news. Henry Blackledge, the Raw Academy keeper, has joined Luton Town. He might be in for a start after they shipped forward to Newcastle on the weekend. Or not, I'm just joking. Please don't take me seriously and quote me on that. But yeah, good move for the Raw pipeline.
Absolutely. It's a great move for Henry Black, who's to go over there to Luton Town, currently a Premier League team. It may end up being a Championship team next year, but either way, it's a pretty good club. Adam's nodding eagerly with that as an Everton fan, but either way, even if they do get relegated, James, the chance to be a part of what is a pretty good academy in the UK there. I think they signed two goalkeepers on deadline day, so they'll probably play off against one another, but we'll see how he goes. It's a great, great move for him. Also, credit to Western Pride here, because that's where he played a lot of his football for in the local competition here in Queensland. That's where he got his start. He was in the Raw squad at a point, but it was in the Australia Cup final. He was on the bench. He never played, obviously, but great move for the young goalkeeper, and hopefully goes well for him in the Premier League for the next couple of years, Adam. Premier League, Adam. With Premier League Luton.
You mean the Championship? Anyway, wherever Henry Blackledge goes, it's a great move as well for the new Ipswich FC sort of merger, because I would dare say that they would have some training compensation fees coming their way, so they can probably financially, and the more he does, the more that they get until he turns 23 years old, according to the rules. So that's great news. But just overall as well, big week for Australian young keepers as well. Obviously with Stephen Hall and Joe Gauchy as well getting big contracts for Premier League clubs that are true Premier League clubs. And yeah, look, I think that it carries on the tradition of that us in Australia, we are producing some world-class goalkeepers.
One, leave Luton alone. Two, didn't Carl Viertz rant about the Adelaide players go under the radar after Marco Rudan stole the spotlight?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And you know what? I agree with Carl Viertz.
All right. Less pleasant news. Socceroos lost to South Korea in the Asian Cup quarterfinal, and all I can really say is Bugger, we lost to a team that hates the coach. Adam?
At least you got to sleep. Scott and I actually were up in the middle of the night covering that. But
to be fair, I was expecting to wake up. I do have an almost 2-year-old.
No. You get a pass. The live coverage stuff, that's the main of Scott and I. But look, this is a hard one to look at, because you know what? If you look at the pre-tournament sort of stuff, that, you know, the expectations of Socceroos were low then, when Korea and Japan and a few other of the big nations seemed to be starting to wander onto the other side of the draw. Expectations seem to rise again to the point where that we're disappointed that we lost to Korea. And I think it's the way we lost. I thought that the first half, they probably put the best 45 minutes up of the entire tournament to really have Korea on the ropes. Probably could have been 2 or 3 nil up, but I think where the mistake was, I think, Dan, if I'm being honest, Graham Arnold got his tactics all wrong. He gambled with the fact that they'll go try and hold Korea out. It didn't work, and they end up paying the ultimate price, because when they got their penalty late, you always knew it was only going to end one way. And Sun Heung-min with that free kick, now he's a world-class player. Not much you can do about it.
Yeah, I've been saying all along, South Korea have the best player in the tournament in Son.
Yep.
I'm glad that he's... Well, I was glad he was playing for South Korea instead of Spurs for the last month until, well, I caught up on the replay on Sunday morning. But, yeah, Scott, like, it does feel like a massive opportunity missed.
It does. Well, Son's going to have a massive opportunity to go and... So antagonise his club coach when he gets back to London after what Ange Postecoglou said pre-tournament. But Adam's right. The irony of this from the Socceroos' perspective is it was their best performance of the tournament in the first 60 minutes or so, and it's the game where they've gone out. It actually really did feel like the 2015 final all over again. The Socceroos got the goal right on the halftime break, and then Korea threw everything at them in the second half and got the very late equaliser. The difference here was, in 2015, Australia had the legs in extra time to be able to overrun the Korea Republic. This time around, you always felt like it was the Koreans who had the legs, and the Socceroos were fading in that second half the more the game went on. And given they had the clear advantage of the extra couple of days of recovery and a much easier and less taxing round of 16 game, that's really perplexing to me. I might talk about the way the whole tournament's gone in a minute, but... That is really just, I can't work out how, when you beat Indonesia 4-0 and you have 2 extra days to recover, how you're against Korea, who played a full 120 minutes against Saudi in what was a really tough and intense game, how are they fitter and stronger than you going into extra time? That, I find that odd, to be honest.
For me, it boils down simply to nerves. I think, like, this whole, you know, Aussie grit and, you know, the willpower and stuff is great to a certain point, but you also need to match that up with backing yourself on the skill level, where you need to go, all right, this is a South Korean side that can score goals. I think they've had at least 3 goals in all of their games prior to that one. Mm. Well, like, 3 total goals scored, I mean. I should know, I wrote the preview this morning. But it's... Yeah, it's a side that has the attacking talent that you're not going to keep them quiet. You know you're going to need at least 2 goals to score, but instead you have to go back into a shell, invite pressure, and just hope that a bunch of these players are going to find a way to just grind out a victory, which they're better than that. Like, I don't want to hear that, oh, they did the best they could. I mean, you know, they're not doing this, they're not doing that, but screw that. They should be getting to the point where they're taking on teams like... Yeah, they're getting to the point where they should be taking on top-tier Asian rivals and saying, no, we're good enough to match it with you. Like, okay, I understand showing deference to a team like Argentina or something in a one-off game and everything, but you need to score to win games, and I don't think Graham Arnold had the faith in the skill level of his squad.
And the irony is, they tried this protect the lead and sit back thing earlier in the tournament against Uzbekistan, and it bit them on the backside in that game as well. Think about, don't forget how much they overran Australia in the last 15-20 minutes of that game. So they've already, the warning signs are already there that this group was not in a place where they could sit back and protect the lead. So that makes it even more puzzling.
And Adam, I'll go to you on this as well, where we have seen some of the online criticism towards players crossing the line, but I think we're going to try and stay a little bit more measured on this as well and say some of the guys in the team, they were, like, they did not play well. Now, you know, is that a sign that should be revoking their citizenship? Absolutely not. But I think it's fair to say Lewis Miller is probably going to look at this and go, I could have done a lot better. Aidan O'Neill, I think, has copped a bit of a lucky break after his stupid challenge for the red card, with Mitch Duke and Miller getting the free rein as well.
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, it happens. You know, like Lewis Miller, I know he would have copped a lot. He made a couple of mistakes. Not only that, was it he that made the mistake in fouling Son, but also as well was then conceded the foul that gave Son the free kick, that where he scored direct from the free kick. So yeah, he's probably not feeling well. But then again, you know what? Lucas Neal went through that. And in 2006,
so did Vinigrella in the 2007 Asian Cup.
Yeah, so it
that
happened.
That was never a red card.
No, it happened though.
Mitch Duke as well. I think that, you know, as I said, yeah, he missed a couple of sins that I would expect that he would have buried 9 out of 10 times. Yeah, look, he copped as well, but again, it happens. But I also, like I said, I question the tactics that Graham Arnold used. That's where, if I'm going to be very hypercritical of the post-mortem of this game, this tournament, it was the tactics that, and again, Graham Arnold got it wrong. Whether he pays for it with his job or not, that's not for us to call. But I just think in that moment, I think that you're right. I think he's absolutely right about the faith in the squad and just relying on trying to sort of, you know, park the bus. I just think in Asia that doesn't work. I think that's I think the team's too canny for that.
Well, 10 seconds on Arnie, if he does move on, it'll be his decision. It won't be Football Australia moving him on. He's still got enough credit in the bank from the World Cup, of course. But I tend to agree, the whole tournament was really, really odd. And watching the games, I never got the feeling like they were on the track towards actually going all the way through and winning the tournament. The first game against India was a really, really tough watch for a few reasons, but it just, they never got going in that game. And the Syria game was marginally better, and Uzbekistan, they dropped points, and the whole thing was really, really confusing. And
it's not just the tactics
were confusing, the selections were also confusing, because on one hand he went for players with experience, but he left a couple of experienced players at home. And then they start talking about, but this is about blooding players for the future, and yet there's no Kachati and there's no Robertson. So it was kind of a half and half hodgepodge, and it just, the whole thing was really, really just weird the whole time. And it's never got the feeling that they were on the track towards winning the tournament. Whereas in 2015, you kind of got the sense that something was building throughout the whole tournament. Even in the World Cup in Qatar, you could sense something was building, the way that you could see momentum going through the whole tournament. They just never got that momentum in this tournament, Australia.
Yeah, so I've got two final thoughts on Graham Arnold as well, and the way he just managed the whole thing. Firstly, this was my big concern about him staying on, not just through to the Asian Cup, but also getting that 4-year extension right through to America 2026. America harder. But I feel like it's screwing up what could have been the perfect redemption arc for him as well, where, look, he'll be the first to admit, his time in the national team in 2006-07, succeeding Huss Hiddink, it really wasn't great. And, you know, he, I think, did a good job redeeming himself with what was a massive overachievement in the 2022 World Cup. And now, 14 months later, he's getting a lot of that blowback again, because now he's kind of committed, and he's probably thinking, I can't afford to screw this up. Yeah, so yeah, that's three straight quarterfinal exits for Arnie now. Thanks, Scott. As we've got that now. And I'm left to ponder, you know, is this maybe an opportunity where Football Australia might go to him and say, look, if you get a club offer, we're not going to stand in your way. Whether or not that actually results in anything, we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, my other thought on this squad as well is, yeah, you're right. It almost felt like there was a little bit of that hangover that we always seem to find with the Asian Cup coming, in this case, 12 months after the World Cup. But it just feels like maybe some of these guys were thinking, oh, we'll just go back to Qatar and see how we go. It's just that secondary event now, which I hate. Like, I want to see them win it again, mostly because I was in Vegas when they won it last time, which...
What? You want Qatar to win this thing?
No, Australia.
Oh, I was going to say.
No. Well, speaking of that, let's use that as a segue. Who's going to win from here? I'm on Iran.
I'm on Korea. I think that they're battle hardened. I think that they're for some reason the talk is that the players don't and the fans do not like Jürgen Klinsmann much, probably because he's German. But I just think that they're the ones that really battle tested with Japan out of the way. I think Iran Qatar is going to be knocked down, drag out. Semi-final, and I honestly think that no matter what happens in there, I think South Korea is just going to pick the bones and is going to break their 44 year drought in the Asian Cup.
Scott?
I tend to think it'll be Iran as well, but because they've been the most consistent throughout the whole tournament. Because the problem for Korea is they've just had two really long games back to back. I know they've got an easy quote unquote semi-final. I don't think it's that easy. I think Jordan are a fantastic story, and they'll make it tough for them. So I think it will be end up being Iran that gets through and wins the final. And just one last thing on the Asian Cup. Shout out to the Indonesian coach Shin Tae-yong, the former Queensland Raw Foundation player, was coaching for Indonesia in this tournament. Great to see him still coaching. He has a pretty good resume actually around coaching circles in Asia as well, James.
Well, there we go. All right. This weekend for the Raw, we'll get this onto local matters because. Well, actually, we should mention as well, we've got the NPL women's season kicking off this weekend, and that also means that we are about to go and record our NPL women's mega season preview. So we've got a double dose of podcasts coming up this week. Don't worry, I'll be a lot more focused in the second one, I promise. But let's talk about the A-League women's. The Raw are heading to Western United, wherever they're playing this weekend.
City Vista Recreation Ground, somewhere in Melbourne.
That's their training ground.
Yeah.
So Western United, 1-0 win over Brisbane when they met earlier this season. The Raw will be without Holly Palmer in this one.
And Aisha Norrie apparently as well. I was just reading the media release from the A-League. Apparently Norrie is also suspended.
Are we sure?
Oh, jeez.
The A-League email says that she's suspended as well.
It was this game fixture last year as well where all the drama happened. So... for love of God, check to make sure that...
Please get it right. Yes.
It lists Aisha Norrie and Holly Palmer on the Football Australia's disciplinary email. That's all I can tell you.
There we go. All right. Adam, what are you expecting from this one?
Look, on their day, Brisbane Roar, I think, can match up with anyone. But wow, Western United are going all right at the moment under Cat Smith. I think that was an absolute stroke of genius with Mark Ticasso stepping down. Cat Smith, who already had a point to prove after unceremoniously leaving Western Sydney Wanderers. I think she got the better part of the deal because she's got Western United absolutely flying at the moment. And without no Palmer, no Norrie, that midfield is going to change, shape very, very, different. I think Western United, I think, can be too good here.
Fair enough. I think it's going to be a draw. I think Smith will get some sort of reaction out of this team. A couple of absences in midfield are a bit of a concern, but this is that time of the season where the Raw really start to pick things up and just give us that little bit of maybe they can go on a run. Yeah. Hope.
As players in midfield will be very, very interesting, actually, because again, two experienced players who've anchored the midfield all year long are unavailable, so very interesting to see how they choose to fill that, whether Tamika Yallop drops into a deeper role or what happens, we'll have to wait and see. But we might see Alicia Woods potentially make her debut this week. We haven't seen her since she signed, so this might be her chance, either starting or off the bench, James. And I think it'll probably be a draw as well.
I'm going to say Yallop, Levin and Stevenson will go from the start, with Woods and Hecker coming off the bench. So I think it'll be a cavalry approach to that midfield role. Alright, the men. It's a 5 p.m. Brisbane time kickoff this Saturday at Suncorp Stadium, and they're taking on Melbourne City. What happened last time again, Scott?
We don't have time to talk about that. Move on.
Adam, what are you looking for in this one?
Look, I actually think that the Raw, believe it or not, I think are a good chance of winning this. And the reason why I say that is because that draw on Friday night against Wellington, I think that may have the confidence up. By the same token, Melbourne City, another big loss. I think that 8-1 win for City was an absolute aberration. I don't think they're that good. I think since that massive flattering win, I think they've been exposed. And Saki, who's left the club, Tolga Arslan as well, who the other two, you know, real destroyers of the Raw in that meeting down the end of December. I think they're and coming over from Perth, I don't know whether they'll go home to Melbourne then come up to Brisbane, or I don't know how they're going to.
They probably did, because it was a Friday night game.
Yeah, but honestly, I think Melbourne City, I actually think are vulnerable, and I would expect, you know, if the Raw can put in a shift like they did against Wellington, I think they're a great chance of winning here.
For me, a point is compulsory. Like, if you want to keep your finals hopes alive, and this is staying consistent with what we were talking about last week in terms of maintaining control of your path to the finals, you need to get something out of this game. A win would be ideal. A point, I think, keeps your hopes alive. But dropping 3 points to a team that is very much right now on the precipice of the six, you need to make sure that they don't gain any more ground on you, first and foremost. And yeah, I honestly am also kind of hoping that there is a little bit of a motivational factor where Zadkovic, for his pre-game talk, just puts on the highlights and goes, "Hey guys, you want that to happen again? I didn't think so. Go."
Yeah. We spent like 10-15 minutes at the start of the show talking about the mentality of this playing group, James. Well, this is where professional pride really does kick in, because when you get beaten in sport like that Raw side did, the next time you play that team, you want your revenge. And I'm sure that will be the case for Brisbane Raw on Saturday evening at Suncorp. I tend to agree with Adam. I think this could be a chance for the Raw to get something out of the game. I know City, they've got some players coming back in. They've got Jimmy Jago coming in. They've got Tilio coming back from the Asian Cup. But they're going to take some time to get up to speed. This is not the same Melbourne City side of the last couple of years. So I think it's a good opportunity for the Raw to potentially get a bit of revenge on Melbourne City, who they have not beaten in their last six or seven games, James. The last one was a 3-0 win up in Redcliffe. Do you have any idea who the goal scorers were? I'll give you a brief hint and say that the same could happen again in this game.
Did Parsons get one that night? And O'Shea?
Yes, they did. You're getting way too good at this. I've got to find some trickier to you.
I'll take the sympathy points at the moment today. All right. Well, I think we might call time on this edition of the Brisbane Football Review, because we do have another episode to record. Our massive NPL Women's Season Preview, which will be out probably not too long after we release this one as well. But in the meantime, thank you, Adam.
Thank you and good night.
And thank you, Scott.
Good talk to you, James. Adam, see you next week.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. Stay tuned on your podcast feed. We've got a whole lot more coming your way, both in terms of A-League and local league coverage, right here on the Brisbane Football Review. And we'll be back to review it all next week. We'll talk to you then.